Hello and welcome to the Stone X Grain and Oilseed Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner. I work with traders, producers, and consumers in the grain and oilseed markets. Also, a lot to do in livestock and cattle and hogs. I help market participants with their physical commodities, their broker-assisted and futures and options trading. Also help clients with their online futures and OTC trading, and also offer consulting services for hedgers. And that's on top of doing this podcast and writing my newsletter, Grains and Oilseeds with Craig Turner. We do have a free version of it. And you can, if you don't get it, you can sign up for it, complimentary in the show notes. And for clients and paid subscribers, we do have the producer and consumer daily versions. Top of that, just pretty much focus on corn, soybeans, wheat, canola, cattle, and hogs. And we'll get more into that as we go on. So if you like the podcast, please give us a positive review. That's how people find us. If you're interested in working with me, anything in corn, soybeans, wheat, canola, cattle, hogs, from broker-assisted trading, online trading, consulting, OTC, swaps, help with your physical sales and purchases, please let me know. All right. Let's get into it here. The WASD was on Friday. Pretty much came in as expected. If I take a look at some of these numbers, I would say soybeans, they didn't touch. We had ending stocks pretty much the same as it was last month. The big number will be March 31st. So soybeans going to be, you know, range bound here. They did increase Chinese imports. So that was interesting. Probably a lot of that demand goes to South America. USDA barely nudged down the South American production, which is interesting because CONAB has brought it down. And one of two things is going on there. Either the USDA is just being cautious and they'll let CONAB lead this ship, or what you have here is maybe the USDA thinks the drought isn't so bad, kind of like last year in the United States where there was a lot of concern about some very big issues going on in corn and soybean country when we didn't rain for 2 months in the spring and into early summer. And then the rains came and yields were pretty good and we had a record yield on corn. So the USDA may be hedging their bets a little bit about how far they really think the soybean markets came down here in terms of yield and production. So not great, but the thing is with soybeans, when I go to my balance sheet here, what I'm looking at is basically at, you know, a little bit over 300 million on soybeans for ending stocks. You know, before COVID, that would have implied soybeans are trading somewhere between like maybe $9.50 and $11, depending on what time of year we are and what we're looking for new crop and if there was any kind of Chinese demand coming in. So what's interesting is, now, you know, 300 million carryout. Instead of soybeans being on other side of 10, it seems like they're on other side of 11.50, which is a 15% higher. And, you know, you can make the case there is 15% inflation in the markets, like real structural inflation since then. And that's what we keep on talking about. You know, what are the new lows? Where are we going to be when we have adequate stock levels? And if the old lows were the low threes for corn and the mid to high eights for soybeans, and you start adding 15% inflation, all of a sudden the old $10 soybeans at 300 million carryout or below is mid 11s. And I think that's a fair price right now for soybeans. So we'll see what happens here. You know, there's some talk on Twitter where beans, you know, they're either above 12 or below 10, and they rarely spend, you know, a whole lot of time in between both. Well, that was before 2020. Now that we're basically in a new higher priced environment in terms of inflation, we could see soybeans in the 11s might be what soybeans were a few years ago in 10. So when I take a look at the balance sheet for new crop, and again, it's my balance sheet, I take a look at 87.5 million acres for soybeans. That's what the Ag Form had. We have a 52 yield. basically our 315 old crop ending stocks goes out to about 425, 430. We're at 10% stocks usage. And, you know, before 2020, that'd be $9 soybeans. Now we're in 2024. I think that's $10 soybeans. I think that's the kind of the low going forward in the risk. Now, listen, we have 86 million acres in new crop. We're going to have this report at the end of the month. We're going to have the planting intentions report. And the USDA seems to think we're adding on 4 million acres of soybeans. I don't know about that. We're definitely going to go higher in the soybean acres. I don't be shocked if we go lower. But do we add on 4 million acres? That's a lot. And that is definitely a lot. Let's say we're at 86 million acres. And what if we have a 50 yield, right? We don't have a great growing season. If we have 86 million acres and a 50 yield, we've got a 179 ending stock. And now beans are back in the teens. But even if we have a good year, we got a 52 bushels and 86 million acres, we're still in the 300s for ending stocks. So the market's probably going to price in this 87.5 to a little bit lower in a trend line yield, and it still puts us in this 350 to 450 ending stock. It means the soybeans are somewhere between tight to adequate, and we've got this $10 to $12 range for beans, and we'll see what happens going forward. But that's where we are, and I think we can, you know, if we get rallies close to the 12s, there's going to probably be a lot of selling pressure. And if we should drop into the 10s, I think there's a lot of buying support down there, not just from traders, but on the commercial side too. And that is pretty much where we are. Soybeans, this week we'll start taking, if you want to take a look at grain and oil seeds with Craig Turner, the producer side of that newsletter service, I think we are going to start having some more targets in the soybeans for farmers. And then if I'm on the buy side here, soybean oil, you know, for anyone who's buying oil for either vegetable oils or if you're buying soybean oil for renewable biodiesel and fuels, 45 cents a pound is a good value. You're probably going to see the traders and some of the specs come in at that level too, especially with palm oil going up. So from the spec side and the consumer side, there's a much more bullish story now for vegetable oil. Palm oil is at a 7-month deficit. Prices are starting to go higher. They had a major conference last month, and it was last week in Malaysia or Indonesia, which are the top two palm oil producers. And they're basically saying they're running out of acres, which so is the United States and Canada. The trees are getting older and they're having lower yields. And they do. While we don't use palm oil, or technically we don't use palm oil here in the United States for renewable biofuels, unless it's used cooking oil, there is B35 and possibly B40, biofuel 35, going into biofuel 40, so a 35% mix versus a 40% mix happening in the Asia and in the Far East, and that's what they're doing with renewable biofuels. So it's not just going on here in North America. There is renewable biofuels and biodiesel happening on the other side of the world. You know, the difference between what goes on here in the United States and what goes on in Asia is just that with different regulations, what's acceptable for certain credits and how they go about it. But it's all being used here. And it seems like to us the vegetable oil component is a cleaner, or at least through these calculations that they're using, it is cleaner, let's say, than a lot of other green alternatives. So we may keep on seeing that and it may be supportive. And canola too. Could be very supportive of canola. Wouldn't be surprised if with canola acres coming down in Canada with what's going on in palm oil and canola oil being able to be used for not only U.S. renewable biofuels, but also that Trans-Pacific Agreement got done between Canada and the Asian countries. So there used to be a lot of tariffs for meal and oil going over into Asia, and that's not going to happen anymore. So crush hasn't only been expanding in Canada for canola oil for renewable biofuels, but it's also because of this Trans-Pacific trade agreement that has gone on, where Canada can crush meal and send it over to Asia, and the old tariffs and taxes are going to be reduced significantly, so they can keep the oil most likely in Canada, and definitely export a lot of the meal out. So that's interesting. That's an interesting development too. Honestly, any kind of excess meal that Canada has, I'm sure they could just ship down to California for all those dairy operations. So that's soybeans. On corn, corn 2.1, 2.2 ending stocks for corn. Listen, before COVID, that would be a mid to high, that'd be a mid three price for old crop, high three, maybe $4 for new crop. See what the spring and summer brings. And you add on 15, 20% inflation, that means old crop is in the low fours and new crop's in the high fours, right? Or somewhere in there. And that's where we are. I mean, that is where we are when you say to yourself, there was real inflation, real structural inflation that happened over the past 4 years, which anyone who goes to the grocery store, just lives life, is responsible for a family, knows exactly what I'm talking about. The inflation is real and it's not going away. And that's just the price shift that we've seen. Sometimes I think to myself, can you just imagine living in the 70s and see those inflation charts? Man, that must have been a wild time. But that's where we are right now. If we have a new crop of 91 million acres and a 181 yield, we have ending stocks of 2.6 billion. So we need to take advantage of new crop rallies. I know there's a lot of old crop out there. And if there is, I like selling it and buying it back on paper. We had a pop here. We could sell it for, July. The calls are pretty reasonable here. And I like that. And I think we need to kind of start to move on from old crop. And if you need any assistance with that, I'm happy to help. I'm definitely happy to help. Not only do we can help you with the futures and options part, but also even on the cash sales part. I have an interview at the end of this at the end of this episode, and it's going to be with the guys from our StoneX commodity team, Ian Finn and Jake Stagner, and we go into depth on how some of these products work. With StoneX, I think it's very effective. You should definitely take a listen to it at the end. As far as what we're doing, I mean, with new crop, you can either sell calls, we can make a cash sale and sell a call, we can use some kind of an accumulator, we can just start making sales, or we buy, if you want to use courage calls, we can buy something out, short dated and for July and sell in, a short dated call option and sell into it on a rally here in the summer, spring and summer. It's just that a 2.6 billion carryout, I think corn, if that's how this ends up, 91 million acres, a 181 yield, just think we're in the low fours, high threes by the end of the year. I put out my monthly corn and soybeans action report. It should come out by the time this is released. It's with compliance now being reviewed. And I have my price projections on there for bullish, neutral, and bullish. And then the charts that I have in that monthly corn outlook report. And if you're a client, you don't get it, please reach out to me. I'll send it to you. Like, we go through the ending stock situation. We go through where we are on exports. We go through stocks usage for U.S. and globally. We go through the weather, and any kind of component that makes up the managed funds, the seasonals, everything that makes up the pricing that goes into corn and soybeans here. And, corn's a range-bound market, and we got to use the upper end of the ranges right now to kind of manufacturer's runs, like be able to add nickels, dimes, and quarters to final sales prices. That's what it's going to be all about this year in corn. So for us to get bullish, have this conversation a lot, just so everyone knows, because some people just don't want to sell early. What does it take to get really bullish on corn? One, we got to be sub 90 million acres, right? So we had 94.6 last year. We got to be sub 90. And this is with $5 corn for a lot of the fall and winter with anhydrous going down. And we got to have yields at 170. And we had a pretty rough spring late spring, early summer last year, and we had a 177 yield. So, and I think we're going to start off better conditions this year than we did last year. So it's just a lot to ask to have 89 million acres and a 170 yield, because that's when you start dipping below 10% stock to usage. And anyone who's been listening to me knows that's what I think is the line in the sand. Like, where do you break out of a normal trading range? And if normal trading range for corn, if the old 350 to 425 is now $4 to $5 in corn, you know, it used to be, what does it take to really break out above that 425, $5 zone in corn? Because if you take off from there, you really start going. It's like, you know, with soybeans, the Twitter discussion on soybeans. Like, once you get, you know, past 10, you go to 12, you can live in, you know, the teens. Now it's, what does it take to get corn above, let's say, 5, 5.25? Because if we can get there, it means we're so tight, we could really have the potential to take off. And that's what it is. It's 80 in my, some combination, and you can adjust them either way, 89 million acres and 170 on the yield. And that's just, so we just got to get aggressive here. If you need help making sales, and again, I'm a consultant. I work with clients on a monthly basis to help them with their marketing. We have cash services here. Listen to the interview at the end of this episode. We can do things in the future, which is nice because, you know, the interview and the episode doesn't take any margin. If you do have a margin account, we can use things here in the futures and options here at StoneX. So there's a lot of ways to go about this. And I'm also going to have in April a webinar, marketing corn in a low priced environment. And these balance sheets, you know, between now and the end of, you know, for 2 years now, I mean, it's looking like we're going to have a low priced environment for corn, a $4 to $5 range. And what are we going to do? And we can break out either way temporarily, but without any kind of major production issues, that is what the numbers is telling us where we're going to be. Ooh, in my monthly corn report, I also have a nice linear regression model. It kind of shows where corn can be based on stock to usage levels. So that is, I think that really helps drive home the point on the corn market here and what we're facing. Finally, for all our wheat farmers out there, listen, we're tight, but if Russian wheat is going to be priced, you know, in the low 200s, it's hard for wheat to rally, 200 per ton, I should say. We did get a nice pop in the export market last week, and we had a nice rally in wheat. And basically, Russia and the EU have been basically racing to the bottom to have their wheat as cheap as possible to get as much market share as possible. And it went down to $200 per ton. And then there was some kind of bottoming action there on the export market, because all of a sudden, the next day, Egypt comes in and they're getting offers for like 230 or 235 from Russia. So something happened. You know, basically, I think they're realizing either they don't want to go down that far, or they're just going to hold 235 in the sand, or maybe they are running out of exportable wheat and it's getting tighter as we get to the end of the marketing season. Regardless of what the reason is, it is going to be supportive for wheat here. Ending stocks for U.S. wheat, about 673 overall between all the classes. Stocks usage 36. That's an adequate level for wheat. At 48 million acres and a trend line yield, we got 800 ending stocks, and wheat, you know, goes to all wheat, averages out around $6. You know, with the winter wheats in the fives, maybe Minneapolis goes down to six, quarter. If we have 47 million acres and a little bit of a yield loss, we get back down to 700 or the high sixes for ending stocks. So it doesn't take much. We'll see what there's going to be less soft red winter wheat in the Eastern Belt. There's going to be less hard red winter wheat in the Western Belt. I think we'll see some sorghum. I think we'll see a lot more sorghum in the western part of the United States. Probably at the we'll see what it's the expense of. But I do think we'll see more sorghum here. So maybe wheat has a little bit of a story here too. I don't think, you know, the old price of wheat being in the fours, low fives, is, you know, when you take the 15% inflation there too, the old, maybe for winter wheat, this low to mid fives is now the kind of the new lows if we treat it the same way as we did with corn and soybeans. So that's where we are and we're in the market. As for, you know, ideas of, you know, what we're doing between now and the WASDE, For the range bound markets like corn, I still like short straddles. I think you can do that right up until the report. I am looking for ways to bear spread these corn. I think that, you know, I think that is going to be a very substantial carry by the end of the year, and that's something we should do. On our cash marketing side, I like for both corn, soybeans, and wheat using the bonus target, and we can talk more about it. You should definitely listen to the interview at the end of this podcast. But we can basically pick targets in the market, have the sale done with the StoneX Commodity Solutions team, and then you can deliver that contract with anyone you want to in your area, and allows you to set the basis when you want to, allows you to also pick your delivery point, because there are different, you know, some operations, you know, especially, you know, when you get to feed yards or more, you know, kind of out of the realm of, you know, where the ethanol plants are and the crush facilities are, sometimes you get operators that only have, you know, are only looking for grain certain times of the year. So next solutions would be definitely a solution for you. You know, sometimes these elevators just have a contract to fill, and they'll raise basis up by 10, 15, 20 cents over everyone else in the area. If you already lock in your basis, you know, with your forward sales with your HT with someone else, you're kind of stuck with that location. That wouldn't be the case here at StoneX, right? You can do it through StoneX and deliver, you know, deliver to whoever you like. So we can also, because there's no margin, we can use a bonus target, which is really selling a call on it. And you can do that here too. So there's a lot of different ways. If you need any assistant, we are going to be in, I would say for corn, we're going to be in a low priced environment here for the year. I'm a little bit more bullish on the oil seeds. So canola and soybeans and palm and wheat, it's going to be about acres too, but, you know, we can definitely go into that. So I appreciate everyone listening. If you have any questions for me, let me know. And remember, I am a futures and options broker here. I work with hedgers on both the buy side and the sell side. We have a lot of traders here. And if you can be broker assisted, we have a fantastic online trading platform that you can use on your computer and on your phone. There's research. You can do cash sales. There's just a lot. There's a lot to do here in futures and options. If you have any questions for me, please contact me. And if I'm not your guy, know I've got an expert here who can help you out too. So all my contact information is in the show notes. And have a great week, everyone. I'll be talking to you soon. And listen to that interview with Ian and Jake. They did a great job. Thanks. All right. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the StoneX Grain and Oilseed Podcast. I am joined here today with Ian Finn and Jake Stagner of the StoneX Commodity Solutions Group. Guys, well, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get the audience familiar with you guys. Why don't you start first, Ian? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. So Ian Finn grew up here in the Midwest in the Omaha Metro. Been at StoneX my entire career, all with the Commodity Solutions Group, and I've spent most of my time in three different buckets in that group. One, in our inventory finance business, where we were owning static inventory or doing origination at ethanol plants or various processors. Second, I think Jake will hit on a little bit here kind of first. And then third, standing up our Farmer Direct program, where we're embedding risk management services into contracts physically for farmers, which allows them to, you know, kind of not have margin on those trades and a little bit easier on onboarding. So over the past almost decade now is kind of what I've spent my time at Commodity Solutions working on.
Wow. Well, that's great. We're definitely going to get a lot more into that. And Jake, can you tell us a little about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So Jake Stagner, I sit in our Omaha office here beside Ian. I cut my teeth in the industry in cash trading. I worked for Gabilon for 8 years, kind of across the Midwest and Mid-South at different elevators and locations kind of across their network. I've been with StoneX Commodity Solutions here for 5 years, and I help manage the grains and oilseeds business here domestically, manage the grains and oilseeds business here domestically with Ian.
That's awesome, guys. Okay, so just so you guys, so for the audience here, I got to know Jake and Ian through basically the Farmer Direct program and also the M Plus program here at StoneX. Can you guys tell us a little bit about both?
Yeah, sure. We can jump into the M Plus or managed pricing program first. Mm-hmm. So our kind of take on a managed pricing program, kind of coming from the cash world, I wanted something that was much more simple and a little bit more transparent than kind of the other offerings in the industry. So I wanted to be able to give producers kind of access to a bunch of different tools without having to kind of have each individual trade put on. And then also for different kind of buckets. And we call it the Portfolio Plus. So it's a very much a portfolio approach to pricing. So kind of think of it as investing in an ETF in your 401k. But again, we wanted to simplify the offering and make it very digestible for the farm community to engage with and know what they're getting and know what to expect.
All right. And so really, so for the M Plus is a way for a farmer to take some bushels that he wants your group, StoneX, to manage for him, and it's going to be a part of, you know, the systematic approach to marketing the grain for that year, correct?
That's exactly right. So okay. I kind of like to refer to it as a little bit of the easy button to get kind of the marketing year started off for pricing the upcoming crop.
Awesome. And when do you guys usually accept people to, you know, to be part of this program? Because you can't enroll anytime. It's got to be periodic, right?
That's exactly right. So we typically run a sign-up period. Usually we start in early winter and then go through February of mm-hmm. the following year. And then the pricing of the product will run from typically mid to late Feb all the way through September. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of aggregating prices across that window.
Okay. Well, so for our listeners here, it looks like we just missed out on the window, but for the new one that will start up like maybe October, November of the end of the year for the 2025 marketing year?
That's correct. And we also will be running what we call a round two. So we like to do a round one program kind of over the winter season, mm-hmm. and then another one after planning decisions have been made. So we'll have another program to start here. We'll probably open it up in the next couple of weeks, and pricing will start early May and run through the end of September.
All right. So that's very important. So anyone listening, if you're interested in this and you want to know more, a lot of you here that are on this are, you know, clients of mine, or, you know, you've been listening to a very long time. All my contact information is in the show notes. And if you want some information on this, I'm happy to pass it along so you guys can get to know what's going on in this program. Now, I do consulting. You know, we do futures and options in my group, but I also act as a consultant and I meet with farmers once a month and we just go over cash marketing. We go over planting decisions, futures and options, make sure they're sold an old crop and new crop with their marketing plan. You know, one thing that has been a hot topic in the consulting meetings that I have with my clients has been the Farmer Direct program. Can you guys shed some light on like how that came to be and shed some light on like how that came to be and, you know, how it's grown through the years and where we are now?
Yeah, absolutely. I can take that one, Craig. So we started the Farmer Direct platform, call it 5 years ago in 2019. And the genesis of that was, look, there's a lot of risk management products that have been added over the last, say, 10 years or so. But getting producers access to those tools can be difficult. So either there is a qualification issue, say with the OTC markets where you have to be ECP qualified, or there's a paperwork issue where onboarding yourself as a futures and options or OTC client could be burdensome or clunky. And then once you get through those barriers, then there's the margining barrier, right? Coming up with initial margin, and then potential variation margin or maintenance margin throughout the life of that trade. And so what we wanted to create was a platform for consultants like yourself, Craig, to be able to offer another tool to producers that lowered some of those barriers to entry. So a much easier onboarding process and a margin-free product where there's a transparent fee-for-service for StoneX Commodity Solutions to take on the margining of that trade.
Right.
So just
because you have the margin and you also have the interest rate risk too, right? Like on that also. So there's going to be a fee. Then there has to be, right? Because the cost of money. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. And one thing that we wanted to do to stand out a bit from maybe the grain industry is to be as transparent as possible. So, you know, we wanted to come up with a platform where we could, you know, farmers could have the confidence that day one, as they do a trade, that cost for that trade from us was not going to change. So to your point, interest rates could go to 20% and market could go from $4 to 10, and the fee that we charge the farmer day one of that trade is not going to change, which we just felt like, you know, was a bit of a differentiator, along with StoneX not having assets that we're trading around or basis position. So we're also not here to make money off of trading the basis or, you know, trying to divert that grain that producers would sell to us to a processing facility or storage facility so that we could then take it and further, you know, process or do something to that grain to make more money, which again, you know, offering that as a standalone, this is the only service we provide, which is this product. It's not a way to entice bushels for a plant or for a position. We thought would make us a bit of a differentiated product and counterparty in the grain space.
So that's a really interesting point that honestly I've never considered before. So because one of the things that being a consultant, and listen, there's a lot of great grain originators out there and a lot of great elevators. I think just like in every industry, sometimes you get a couple of either bad actors or you get inexperienced salesmen. I've been in this business for a long time. You get inexperienced futures and options broker, and I think I've been doing this forever. And sometimes, you know, the incentive to get as many bushels as possible can sometimes get in the way into the product offerings, you know, and I've seen and that go wrong before. And I'm sure there are listeners who have gotten on the wrong side of an accumulator or something like that and didn't really understand it. What I do like about what I like a lot about Farmer Direct is what you just said there, like, you know, you're not structuring products to get as many bushels as possible, right? Because you need it for the back end or meeting some contract that you have. Like, you know, you're really just giving them a straight up transparent price for what they're doing, and you're allowing them to price it using some of the advantages of either the OTC market or being able to do this stuff without putting up margin. And so with that said, like I had a conversation really just today, the farmer, and he's a client. He was a futures and options client for a long time, and he just opened up one with StoneX Commodity Solutions. And you know, we were like, you know what, if December corn runs up to 480, you know, we want to sell 5,000 bushels, for example, right? And he has this account now, and we have it working with you guys. And just to make it a little bit real for the listeners, let's say they open this account, they have a corn December corn contract working at 480. We place it with your desk. It gets filled. What happens next?
Yep, exactly. So step one, we are going to notify Craig and that farmer that order has been filled. So now we have StoneX has a 5,000 bushel purchase from that farmer for harvest delivery against the December futures. We're also then at that point is where we're going to implement that transparent fee. So for easy math, let's say that night out of our system, a contract for 5,000 bushel HTA, so no basis set, at 470, which is that net of the 480 and 10 cents. The location is also going to be TBD. So, you know, we don't have you set the location and the delivery and the basis all at once kind of at the beginning. You still have that open to be able to set the basis when and where and how and in what manner you want to do that. Maybe then fast forward, kind of taking this transaction all the way to the end. We get 4 months down the road. We're in the summer. Maybe producer sees a basis level at a local processor that he likes. He calls up either Craig or our desk and says, hey, I would like to set basis on that 5,000 bushel HTA. The local bid is 10 over. We are then going to get a hold of that merchandiser and say, hey, we've got 5,000 bushels purchased from a print over. We are then going to get a hold of that merchandiser and say, hey, we've got 5,000 bushels purchased from a producer. We want to go ahead and set basis at 10 over and set a delivery time frame for that for the month of November. That night, then the producer is going to get an edited contract that now has that 10 cent over basis. So again, we're just going to mirror and pass through whatever we got at that location back to the producer's contract. Now he gets a basis of 10 over. He now has an all-in cash price of $4.80 for delivery of November. We are also going to grab the contract from the buying location that they have with us and put that on the producer contract that acts as an unload number. So one question we get a lot and one thing we want to avoid is if you have your own personal contracts going to that processor to that location, what we don't want is a bunch of cross-contamination where they're settling tickets, either spotting you out or applying to your. So by having that contract number from the buying location as they're buying from StoneX, then you can use that as your unload number so the location knows how to apply those tickets, which gets you paid faster and quicker.
Alrighty, and who is paying the farmer? Is it StoneX or is it the delivery point that pays them?
Yep, great question. So as you deliver, you give them the unload number, you deliver those five loads. Location is going to send over to us after the delivery has taken place, the settlement sheet with those five loads. Then StoneX is going to turn around, settle those in our system against your sale to us. And then the check or the ACH will come from Commodity Solutions.
All right. Awesome. And if you have an ACH, they just take care of it right there and then. All right. That's awesome. So, you know, what's interesting here is as I'm listening to this, one very interesting point is that, you know, while the farmer is able to, you know, basically have that HTA price in there and not have to deal with the margin, they still have control over the location, right? Of who they're going to deliver to, and even can continue to not just base the shop with, you know, one location but multiple locations in their area. I've got to imagine that's a pretty big selling point with a lot of farmers.
Yeah, correct. That's one of the main reasons that we started up the program. We thought that there was a decent amount of demand from the producer side to be able to access all of the marketing tools that he needs with one place and still have his basis and delivery portion of his price undecided. So as the marketing year kind of progresses and he's layering in prices and making decisions around futures price, he can do that in one place and still keep his options open around where he actually takes his physical grain as harvest happens and delivery takes place.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because sometimes you get this question every once in a while, locally, why does one shops, you know, at one location's basis may rally compared to others, right? And there's cash contracts that go on. And a lot of these elevators have also sold, whether they be to ethanol plants or feedlots or anyone who's going to be processing those on the end user side. And if they don't have enough of that corn or soybeans as it gets close to that physical product, they may start bidding up locally to try to fill their orders. And I mean, you could see basis in one location go up 10, 15, 20 cents compared to another. On the surface, there's no rhyme or reason to it, but what's really going on there, there's a still isn't locked into one location after doing one of these things. Like, you can still look for those kind of opportunities.
Yeah, I know. And I do just want to double click on one other point is we also find this platform is great where, you know, you might have locations that are not kind of pure grain trading houses. So if you're dealing with a location that's maybe a little less sophisticated in their origination offering, i.e. you've got a feedlot you like to deliver to, but they only offer cash prices, or they only offer a basis price, or they make you price in a certain window and you don't have like ultimate flexibility for that pricing, or maybe it's a seed company you deliver seed to and you can only price against one reference month and you only get like a 30-day window, or maybe you can only price upon delivery. Any of those locations where you're probably getting a premium for delivering there because the product offering from a pricing perspective is limited, those are great spaces where we can jump in. We can take on the limited pricing options by selling to those locations, and then allow you to have the ultimate pricing flexibility by selling to us and kind of relieve yourself of the burden of I can only sell cash or I can only price upon delivery. So just a bit of a twist kind of on the product, but it kind of goes into the basis setting portion, in which if you can price with someone like ourselves, in some of those cases, you know, you can get, you know, more pricing flexibility than maybe where you're going to today.
I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. Just this conversation here is having me thinking about a few conversations I had a week ago that's centered around accumulators. And you know, there's a lot of different outfits out there that offer accumulators. There's things, in my personal opinion, there some are a better deal for and what their needs are. And I've actually gotten to know them pretty well. I know at StoneX here, when we go into content to our system, like you can see maybe 20, 30 different types of structured products, like on the OTC side. And then our competitors also have a wide range of products. One thing that I really like is that I've gotten to be pretty good read on all of them and, you know, explain exactly what they do for each farmer. If you were saying before, setting up an OTC account can be cumbersome and also restrictive in terms of some of the requirements, working with the elevator, you may or may not want to do with it. But if we wanted to, if let's say I found something that I really liked and that was an accumulator, I could, if they are a SCS client, could we do something like that with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So within the platform, you know, we kind of talk about getting access to risk management strategies. So kind of underlying that management strategies. So kind of underlying that are the vanilla futures and options, the managed price programs that Jake talked about earlier, and then the most popular products from our OTC desk. So there is a variety of accumulators. Again, if Craig hasn't sent you kind of what we have available, you know, please reach out and he can get you the kind of listed products that we have available to embed into those contracts. But again, because these are physical contracts, you know, we can kind of price them as we see fit, and they are not OTC contracts where we're, you know, settling them in an OTC account and they're swaps. These are still just physical contracts that we're pricing, you know, maybe in a more creative way.
Gotcha. But you can still kind of take advantage of those strategies, right? It's not an OTC product we're in, but we're still using the same kind of strategy in an SCS account.
Exactly. Yep.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome. That's great. Guys, this has been very informative. I know this podcast is going to be a big hit. Is there, you know, anything that I didn't ask or I'm leaving out about, you know, what you guys do or, you know, what to look forward to with your group?
No, I think we covered a lot. One thing I will just hit on one additional thing, you know, that we come across quite a bit, which is, you know, as you get in these conversations with Craig, obviously, you know, fees and costs need to be a part of that conversation, right? You guys are running a business. It's important that you guys are kind of running your business in the most optimal way possible. And one thing I would just say is there might be a possibility that, you know, you could find maybe a cheaper HTA rate at a local elevator or buyer. But what I would say is, you know, maybe ask yourself how many times on the phone with me every month to talk about my positions. How many times when there's a 20-cent rally is he in my ear saying, hey, remember when we talked about selling 15,000 bushels last week, this is the time to do it. Then I would just say that even if there is maybe a little bit higher cost than where you could quote unquote get it the cheapest, you know, is that gap worth what Craig brings to you in your operation? I would say yes. Like it's been what we've seen in our portfolio across kind of introducers that bring farmers to us, having that consultant on your side and kind of in your pocket, talking to you about markets and working with you on pricing is certainly what we have seen has been more valuable than maybe a slight increase in the price. And again, missing a market by 10 or 20 or 50 cents could have way more of an impact than maybe, you know, knowing that you could get something cheaper, but you're not getting maybe the service and the consulting aspect that you can get with Craig and his team.
That is awesome. You know, I just thought of one other thing, and it's something that it doesn't pop in the head often, but, you know, just doing our due diligence here, I do think I need to bring it up. You know, what happens if we get a real drought and, you know, a farmer, instead of having 100% of his expected production, only has 80%, and maybe he doesn't have 5,000 bushels of corn that he can deliver on, right? What happens in that case?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's a good question, and one we get often. So since all of our contracts are cash contracts with, you know, kind of the expected delivery of the underlier, all of those contracts are governed by NGFA trade rules. So it's the National Grain and Feed Association. We go into a process of canceling or underfilling those contracts, and it's all kind of laid out specifically around notification of when, you know, we find out that you won't be able to deliver, and then the economics won't be able to deliver, and then the economics associated with that. So we'll go out and buy in the grain that you won't, that producer won't be able to deliver, and then calculate the economics between the price that we had contracted versus the price that we had to buy in. And then, you know, exchange economics versus that. So in that kind of unwanted event where Mother Nature doesn't work out, we try to be as flexible as possible to give the producers kind of options around that and help make the best decisions for their farm and their program.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, it has happened before. I mean, one of the benefits of having a futures and options account is, I mean, I've had clients where, you know, they had a HTA with the elevator, and they're like, you know what, I thought I was going to have 100,000 bushels of corn, and I think they just kind of ride that up, you know, during tough time, or just at least protect themselves. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it, but it is really nice to hear that you guys have a solution for it, because it doesn't happen often, but regardless of what kind of grain origination or pricing strategy you're going to use, you need to know that answer no matter who you're dealing with.
Absolutely. Yeah. You got to know the risks in a risk management program.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, I tell you what, guys, this has been a great episode, and I'm really glad you came on. I think between the M plus and having a managed solution for a portion of your bushels. And I'm glad to hear round two is coming up around the corner. And I really like the Farmer Direct program. Anyone who's listening to this that has an account with me or doesn't and wants to know more, all the information is going to be in the show notes. It is definitely another tool in the toolbox. And regardless if you deal with an ethanol plant, or a feed yard or an elevator, you should also have, you know, an account with us at SCS, so you have more options. And when the time is right, you can use one of these products over here too. So, you know, Jake and Ian, thanks so much for coming on. And I actually look to having you guys on in the future.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Appreciate you signing up. We'll be back soon.
All right. Great, guys.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels Trading Broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, losses, and other factors, such trading may result in the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniel's Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniel's Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims.